Hey, welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, once again with Leon Wielicki, here for part four. Cool. All right, let's go back to the guidelines then.
So, a final word for this one?
Yeah.
There's a small trade-off here that we need to be aware of.
Okay.
And it's the flexibility versus complexity.
Right.
Because, as you can see, the CLR property is the one that has better perf.
Okay.
But has less flexibility.
Right.
And at the same time, it's a simpler one to implement, right? It's just a property.
Yeah, and there is one other difference that I noticed anyway, and that is, and we're going to talk about validation later, but in the cache metadata, you can validate a CLR property because its value is known at cache metadata.
Yes.
But you can't evaluate an in-argument during cache metadata.
You're right. You can, but it has two sides of that coin, right?
Yeah.
Because if you have arguments, you can use the required arguments and the overloops attributes that you cannot do with CLR properties. So each one has its own merits and demerits.
Yeah. Okay, true. All right, so let's move on.
Body mm-hmm. versus children activities.
Okay.
So did you ever ask yourself why while activity, for example, has an activity as its body and not a collection of children?
Yeah, you know, in fact, in the hands-on lab for Introduction to Workflow, I have a custom activity called pre-post sequence, okay? And it sort of violates this guideline because it implements its own collection of children, even though its only goal is to have something that happens before the sequence, something that happens after. But, you know, we did it this way because we wanted to illustrate kind of a compositive activity as a learning exercise, you know, so we did it. But anyway, yeah, you know, I didn't even realize the difference, but, you know, now that you've mentioned it, when you look at a lot of activities that contain, you know, even something like an if-then or, you know, whatever, they have one activity and you end up dropping a sequence inside there and then you get other things.
Right, and this goes down to the composition story that we commented at the first episode, at the part one.
Yeah.
Because and a workflow is a tree of activities.
Right. Right?
So an activity can be fully composed, can be very easily composed with any other activities.
Right, right.
So when you have, for example, in while, you have the body.
Yeah.
You can put there an invoke method, a write line, just a leaf activity, or any composite activity, like a sequence, flowchart, or any control flow that we can come out with, or any custom activity that you can you create.
So because the while has a body and not children, it's more flexible. It allows you to decide what kind of control flow I want inside the while. If it had children, then it would be more rigid. It would have a specific control flow, so it would maybe be only a sequence, you know, and then you couldn't put anything else there.
Exactly. While it's not coupled to any control flow option that we have.
Yeah, in fact, you could put the new state machine inside of a while loop, which would be kind of interesting.
you can do, if someone wants to do that, try that out. We have the CDP of the state machine, and today, I mean, if you download it and you just build it, you can just add the state machine in a while or in a for each or in whatever. I mean, there's no limit, like we discussed before, there's no limit in how you can compose composite activities.
Okay.
So let's go through these two guidelines, and you'll see that you'll feel better because at some point you didn't totally broke the guideline with your sequence. So the first one is, do use a body activity in an activity that schedules a single child.
Okay.
That's what we've been discussing, right?
Right.
While, cancellation scope. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, if we continue with that while discussion, what's the goal of while? The goal of while is executing a contained activity while the condition holds true.
Right.
But while doesn't care about the execution semantics of that contained activity.
Right.
It's not its business, right?
Yeah.
It just wants to execute it while that connection holds true, while that condition holds true,
Yeah.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. So let's say that we add a children collection to while.
Right.
We will run into all the problems that you already mentioned. Like, what would be the execution semantic of that collection?
Yeah.
Who would enforce that semantics and implement
that
semantics?
Then we would have the while sequence, while flowchart, while state machine. It would be kind of crazy. Yeah.
And the code for while activity would be more complex as well, right?
Yeah. It's certainly a lot easier when you only have to deal with one child. Yeah,
and that goes to another principle that we will discuss later about simplicity and having activities with a very well-defined contract and very well-defined and crisp semantics.
Okay,
just,
cool.
You know, do one thing, but do it well.
Yeah, all right.
And the second one is, okay, we said when to add a body activity, right?
Right.
Now, do have a children-like property.
Right.
If the activity coordinates the execution of its children.
Okay.
For example, sequence and parallel or flowchart.
Okay.
In the case of the sequence, sequence has a collection of activities.
Yeah.
And it has the, in this execute method, it has all the code, all the logic to execute that collection sequentially, one after the other.
Okay.
Same for parallel, right? It has a collection.
Yeah.
And it, in its execute method, it has all the logic to execute them in parallel, to schedule them all parallel. Same goes for flowchart. It has a collection of nodes, and it will, like, for flowchart, execution semantics.
Okay. So in the case of my pre-post sequence, if I just change that to just pre-post, I was tempted to call it pre-post activity, but that would be bad. If I just called it pre-post, and I had one body for the main thing, then you could be the pre and then a flowchart and then a post, or pre and a state machine and then a post. It could have done that. But right now, the way it is, it's pre-post sequence because, like I say here, it is coordinating the execution of the child activities. It's enforcing the sequence semantics. But, okay, I get you there.
Yeah, and even further, I mean, you're right. If you would like to generalize that pattern, you could have the pre-post. We have to see how to name it. With a body that doesn't have to be even like flowchart, parallel, or sequence. It can be a while or a for each or whatever composite activity that you want to put there, or even leaf activity.
Right, right.
But in your case, since, I mean, what you were trying to do is a different type of sequence.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have composed the existing sequence. Or,
right. And plus, I wanted to show the designer how to do the designer with that. So anyway, I needed to have that. Anyway, we're fine.
And this leads us to a principle.
Yeah.
At the end, that is, if it can have one child, it should have one child.
Hmm.
I mean, if you have an, and if you're like hesitating between a children and a child, I mean, just favor the simple, the simplest path.
Okay. All right. So if you're asking yourself, if this activity would work with just one child, I should make it work with one child and then let people drop a sequence or a flowchart or whatever. If they want more than one, let some other container serve as the other more than one.
You're right, because the child can be any tree, any arbitrary tree, any composite activity that you can supply to it.
Yeah, and that gives people more flexibility with your activity.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I like that. Okay. Good.
And if you think, to finalize on this, that principle you will see in most of the activities in the toolbox, like while has a body.
Yeah.
Cancellation scope has a single child, single body, body of type activity, right? A single child. Transaction scope, same thing.
Right.
For each, same thing. Parallel for each, same thing.
But parallel, like parallel is a case where you say, this can't have one child, because it doesn't make sense to have parallel with one child.
Same for sequence.
Right. And so then you say, well, this, because it makes no sense to do this with one child, we have to have children.
Yes, and yes, exactly. Okay. But in the case of parallel for each, you don't need to have multiple children, right?
Right.
Because you're executing that contained body in parallel.
Right, right, yeah. I like it. Okay.
Yep, let's move forward. Variables.
Ah, yes.
That's the other question that many people ask us, like, when do I need to put a variables collection in an activity?
So this is an interesting one because it's not often clear how the whether or not your activity has variables relates to the end user experience of using your activity. So if I create an activity that does not have variables, what that means is when the end user drops my activity, if they go add a variable, they can't set the scope of the variable to my activity.
Right.
Because I don't have variables.
You cannot contain variables in that activity.
Right.
What you will see in that activity are all the variables from the parent.
Right, right.
That are in scope in the upward hierarchy.
Okay, okay. So, but if I do want them to have variables, okay, so why would I do that?
Good. So, let's see. Do add a variables collection to an activity that needs to enable sharing data between its children.
Okay.
For example, sequence or peak, to give two examples.
Yeah.
So in that case, what you want to do is to have some variables that are shared among all the children of that activity.
Yeah.
So that's why you declare a variables collection. So you can put that variables there, and there will be available to all the children.
And that's important if I thought that my composite might be the topmost activity, right? Something that the first thing gets dropped on the designer and then people put things inside of it. Because if I don't have variables, then there's no way for them to declare a variable that would be shared amongst the child activities unless I was contained in something else that had variables.
But that's the beauty of the model, right? Because at any point in the tree, you can add something that can contain variables.
Right.
For example, let's say that, and I'll read the, I keep this on hold for a second, read the next guideline, and address the thing. Because on the counterpart, when do not add variables, right?
Yeah.
Do not add the variables collection in composite activities that do not share data between children.
Okay.
For example, for each.
Uh-huh.
So, to your prior point, let's say that you put your for each as the root of your tree.
Yeah.
In that case, you don't need to share any state between the the children of the for each and the child.
You can't share any state.
Because you have a single body.
Right, right.
But what you can do, though, is to put a sequence as the body of the for each and declares the variable in that sequence.
Yeah.
And that
variable. So you can't prevent people from declaring variables that they're going to share amongst the child. You can't prevent it. But if you think it's not important to your activity, then just let them put it in some other container.
Exactly. And there's I'm calling out this guideline because we heard often some people saying, okay, if it's a composite activity that's scheduled out of activities, it should have a variables collection by default.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like some people was putting that variables collection even if they were not using it.
Right.
So I just wanted to call this out because, I mean, there are a lot of reasons that you don't have to do it. And it's better if, I mean, the smaller the surface area of your activity, the better.
Oh, that's a good principle. Actually, that's a principle that's generally true across any class.
Yeah.
You know, you should keep it as small of a surface area. Your public surface area is the things you have to test, things you have to document. You should keep it small and simple.
Yes. Right.
Okay.
And let's go. The next one is very interesting, and it refers to implementation variables.
Ah, yes.
Because we have like two types of variables.
Uh-huh.
One are the variables that you use as an activity user.
Yeah.
Like the ones that you use in the designer surface.
You see them, show,
and you
they
see
show
them,
up.
You share them between all the children hierarchy.
Okay.
And let me read this guideline, and I will go a bit deeper on what implementation variables are.
Okay.
Do use implementation variables to store internal state in an activity.
Mm.
Implementation variables are intended for activity author consumption.
Okay.
I'm writing an activity.
Yeah.
If I use implementation variables, I will be able to use them as the activity author, but they will not be exposed to my activity users.
Okay. So, for example, when I created the pre-post sequence, I had a list of child activities, and I had to keep track of which child activity I was on, so I had a counter or an index, which was like my the child activity I was currently executing. And I don't want to surface that to the user of my activity, but I need to keep it. Now, some people might just say, why don't I declare, you know, an int index on my class and, you know, be just done with it. Why do I have to do this implementation variable?
That's a great point, and that's one of the best treats that implementation variables provide us.
Yeah.
The reason is that the implementation variables are part of the instance state. And as part of the instance state, they get persisted with the instance when it goes idle, right? When you save it to...
So, if I create my sequence and I just declare an int index, if somebody happens to use that and there's no persistence, it will just work fine.
Yeah.
And I'll think, hey, this is okay. My activity works, right? And then somebody somewhere will put something inside my sequence that I didn't anticipate that, you know, schedules a bookmark or the thing goes idle. It gets persisted, later it comes back, and now my sequence is broken because it starts over again.
It won't remember where you left. The thing with the implementation variable is, since it's part of the state, when you reiterate back from persistence, that implementation variable will be restored as well.
So
you will be able to continue from where you left.
So really, as an activity author, I should never, if I need state that I am going to use just internally, I should never just use a plain old int or a string or something like that. I really should use an implementation variable. Otherwise, because I don't know for sure what people might do with my activity out in the world somewhere.
And even not people. That's something that can happen at the host level, right? Like you said, you have a read line or a wait for input that has a bookmark.
Yeah.
That will work perfectly if you are not persisting.
Yeah.
But persistence is something that you can configure at the host level.
Yeah.
So suddenly that workflow that worked, even in a test environment, when you move it to production and you set up persistence, it will start to fail.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if you test it in a no persistent host.
Right, right. Oh, so that's actually a good point when it comes to testing activities, is that you might want to think about testing them in different scenarios, like a scenario where there is persistence involved, you know, and because you want to be sure that it works even if it is persisted.
Yeah, right.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, because in this case, I mean, you could have like a huge battery of tests, yeah, all pass, but if you don't have a test that checks if it works under a persistence environment, a persistent, yeah, environment, when you go to production, it will fail.
Still gonna fail. Good point. Okay, implementation variables are important. And by the way, if you do an implementation variable, you have to register it in cache metadata,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll get that in the next guideline.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
Great. So let's move forward.
Here we go. There we go. Okay.
So we get the question very often, when do I have to overwrite cache metadata, or why should I overwrite cache metadata?
Yeah.
As we explained before, there's a default implementation for cache metadata, yeah, that reflects on the activity and gets, uh-huh, all the data that you need.
Right. Right.
So why should we overwrite it?
Yeah.
We discussed before on the performance guidelines, yeah, that you might want to override it to achieve better performance.
Right.
That's one of the reasons, but I'll go through these guidelines, okay, and we'll discuss some more reasons.
Okay.
So, do override cache metadata for adding validation, registering dynamic arguments and variables, registering implementation variables, and avoiding reflection.
Okay.
So let's delve into these ones,
all right,
a bit. First of all, adding validation.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that before, right?
Right.
I mean, at some points, what you can do in cache metadata, mm-hmm, activities have a collection of constraints.
Yeah.
So you can add constraints to your activity.
Yeah.
Or even you can do validation in just plain CLR code.
Right, right. So you could validate like in my diagnostic trace activity, I had a CLR property, and if you didn't set this string that you want to trace, you know, I say, oh, you know, you have to set that string, right? So I validate,
yes,
that, right?
If you have CLR properties, mm-hmm, since you know the value,
yeah,
you can just validate them at cache metadata and,
right,
surface a validation error,
right,
that will be shown in the designer.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, totally.
Just
shows up.
Just by
great
doing that, it will show in the designer.
Yeah.
Other thing that you can do is we have constraints that,
yeah,
are also activities.
Uh-huh.
So you can you can add elements to the collection of constraints of your activity.
Ah.
And all the errors resulting from the execution of that constraints will surface in the designer.
Ah, now see, I didn't do that before. Now the constraints are, when do they get evaluated?
When you call the validation for an activity.
Okay, so
the designer does it for you.
So I can use constraints to validate, like if somebody didn't supply a required argument?
Well, you don't need to do, let me think a second. You can use constraints, let me give you another scenario.
Okay.
Because since you're validating arguments without constraints,
yeah,
you don't know the value of the argument.
Right, right.
So you won't be able to, no, you cannot do that.
In cache metadata, you cannot validate an argument because
you don't
have a context to look at what it is yet.
Yeah, because it hadn't been evaluated yet.
Right.
So you don't know what the value is.
Yeah, but you know, you think, there's a property grid, there's places where people can put in the expression that the argument would have. So, you know, what I want to do is say, if I'm accepting an in-argument of string and there's no expression provided, I want to say like, hey, that's, you didn't provide me something.
That's something that we actually,
yeah,
provide out of the box. And is that you can decorate your arguments,
yeah,
in the surface of your activity, in the public,
yeah,
signature, with a required argument attribute.
Yeah, okay.
And it will check that the argument has been set.
Okay, so give me a case when would I want to add a constraint?
Let me give you an example. And actually, we have code in the SDK that shows how to do that.
Oh, okay.
After that, so let's say that you're in a no persist, you want to write a no persist scope activity.
Yeah, okay.
Right? An activity that sets a no persist zone.
Yeah.
One thing that you don't want to allow,
yeah,
is dropping a persist activity inside of your no persist zone, right?
Oh, yeah, that would be bad, yeah.
That won't work.
Yeah.
That will,
okay,
that will fail. So one thing that would be good, I mean, we don't have, as we've been saying lately,
yeah,
we have full composition in the model, so we don't restrict how can you compose your activities, right? Anything,
right,
can be added inside.
Yeah, so we're not going to stop somebody from dropping one.
So
yeah,
if you create your no persist scope activity by default,
yeah,
you'll be able to drop a persist activity inside of its body.
Right.
Now, what we want to do is to write a constraint.
Uh-huh.
So if a persist activity is dropped,
yeah,
as part of the body,
mm-hmm,
at any level in the tree, we will surface a validation error.
Okay, so your constraint would loop through all of the contained activities, looking for activities it doesn't like.
Yeah.
Something that might introduce persistence.
Right.
Okay.
And of course, I mean, in the SDK it's sample, we are just looking for the persist activity.
Right.
You can make it extensible for whatever you want to do.
Right, right.
We have like some helper activities that help you to walk the entire tree up and down.
Ah, okay, okay. So I'll have to look at that sample. All right, good. Okay, that's great. I learned something new.
I can show it. I mean, if we are on time, I can show it in a minute.
Okay, well, let's keep going.
Yep. So another interesting thing is registering dynamic arguments or variables.
What's a dynamic argument or variable?
Yeah, glad you asked. Some activities, we said that the arguments describe the public surface of an activity.
Right.
Right? And in some cases, we know what that public surface is.
Right.
What are the input? What are the outputs? Uh-huh. But in some other cases, we don't know in advance. Think in invoke method.
Okay.
In invoke method, you don't know what are going to be all the parameters of any method that you will call.
Right, right.
Because you can use invoke method to call console.readline or console.writeline or any method in your API, right? Whatever you want.
Okay, so if I'm creating an activity where I don't know up front what the parameter set might be or what arguments I might need, so I could, at cache metadata, I could say, oh, you want to do that? That's going to take three arguments or four arguments. And then I can, in cache metadata, dynamically add those.
The thing, yes, exactly. The thing is that that activities, like invoke method or send, that has a collection of parameters as well.
Right.
They have a collection of arguments in their public surface.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is in cache metadata is iterate through that collection and add each argument to the metadata of the activity.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Oh, that's cool. All right.
Same for variables. Like in the sequence activity. And
right.
I'm sure that you did that in your pre-post activity. You have a variables collection.
Right.
So if you want to add that variables to the state of your, I mean, to the metadata for your activity, what you do is iterate through that collection and add each variable to the metadata for the activity.
Yeah, and if I remember right, I think there's a helper that adds a collection.
You can add a collection.
Yeah.
So you don't need to iterate.
It does the iteration for you, that's all. Yeah. But no, that's cool. Okay, I get it.
So that you do in cache metadata.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing is registering implementation variables.
Right, which we just talked about in the previous guideline, those implementation variables, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the default implementation of cache metadata cannot guess what's the internal state of your activity. That's a decision that you make as the activity author.
Right, right.
So if you want to use implementation variable, you will need to overwrite cache metadata.
Yeah, exactly. And you get some interesting errors, like if you try to use a variable that wasn't registered, you know, the runtime throws exceptions on you, things like that.
At runtime.
Yes, it does.
When you're executing this, this is not catch. This is not catch at the same time.
So right. Yeah.
Something that you need to take care of. And the other one is avoiding reflection that we already discussed for the performance guidelines.
Right. Right.
One episode ago.
So you, in this case, you avoid reflection because, you know, you've already registered all the children and the variables and stuff. I guess if you wanted to, you could still call into the base implementation and let it do the reflection so you just add the things you want. But as long as you've overridden it, you might as well do the whole thing.
Right. No, but that's great. And that's another trick that I was going to mention.
Yeah.
Let's say that you don't have any strong performance requirement. You're okay with the performance, but you want to use an implementation variable.
Yeah.
And you have a quite complex activity, and you don't want to write, I mean, to overwrite the whole thing.
Yeah.
So what you can do is just overwrite cache metadata, add the implementation variable, and then call the base implementation.
Yeah, and then it will use reflection to get everything else.
To be fair, I mean, I'm mentioning that if someone wants to get started with implementation variables and he does not want to go through all the process of doing the full cache metadata.
Right.
This tip that I'm commenting, we don't do in any of our activities.
Exactly. I mean, as long as you're doing this, you might as well get the performance gain and just learn about doing the whole thing. Okay, that's good. Okay.
Great. Final one on activity design.
Okay.
Keep it simple. That's the idea. Simplicity.
And actually, our activities are really simple. When you look at them, you see they are very simple.
That's what we try. We try to have very concise semantics.
Yeah.
Like very crisp signatures and very defined and concise semantics. Like an activity does only one thing and it does it well.
Yeah, and in fact, the composition model of workflow just makes that so much easier, because if you find yourself saying, well, my activity has to do 10 things, maybe it's better to have 10 activities instead of one.
Yes.
You know, and make them more composable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll go real quick through the principles, and then we can discuss a bit on that, because that's the spirit of these guidelines.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly what you said. So, avoid Swiss Army knife activities. Mm-hmm. Like a Swiss Army knife activity would be an activity that does 10 things, like you said, with a lot of knobs and bells and whistles, and you can configure with like even multiple excluent settings, you know, something that is not very clear. So what we rather want is simple activities, following the KISS principle, then keep it simple.
Yeah.
And to give an example, for each and parallel for each.
Yeah.
Sequence and parallel. I mean, we could have just one activity for each case, like one iteration activity with a knob.
Yeah, okay.
Or one, one which, container.
We could have had a little drop down. Do you want parallel or sequence? Or, yeah.
Yeah, but if we elaborate a bit on the for each thing, then it starts to get a bit more complicated because, for example, there are some scenarios that make sense in the parallel for each that do not make sense in the for each.
Yeah.
For example, let's say that you want to have the approval of an undetermined number of managers.
Okay.
So you don't know how many of them you will need to get the approval from.
Yeah.
So what you do is you can have a collection of managers.
Yeah.
And with a for each, with a parallel for each activity,
you
can send messages to all of them.
Yeah.
Now, let's say that once you get the approval of three of them, you're good.
Yeah.
So you send, like, let's say that your collection has 10 managers that you wait the approval from.
Yeah.
You send to the 10, to the 10 of them.
Yeah.
Once you get the three, we have something that we call completion condition.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that will be evaluated every time a branch is completed, and when it holds true, all the rest will, all the outstanding work will be canceled.
Yeah.
So this is something that makes sense for parallel for each, but not for each. So now you start to have settings that in one case work, in the other don't. You can misconfigure your activity.
So then you'll be like, if you choose sequence, you can't set a completion condition. So we show you validation error, like you have sequence, but you can't do the completion condition. And you start seeing those kind of things, then you go, let's make two activities.
Yeah, let's make two activities, and let's make very clear what activity is for.
Yeah.
What are the scenarios for each activity? What are the semantics for each activity? And therefore, it will be easier to know when to use it, and it will be more composable.
I get you. Okay. Yeah.
And again, composition. Do favor composition over inheritance. And this is not ours. This is something that has been around for years and years.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's something that we strongly encourage from the framework.
So you could have made a base class called, you know, iteration, and had parallel derived from it and sequence derived from it, and you know, you could have done that, but you didn't.
But actually, if you look with the reflector our activities, you'll see that all of them are sealed.
Yeah.
So we don't want to encourage people to derive from our activities and add more capabilities. If they want just to extend our activities, they can do a new custom activity, composing the ones that we have in the box and adding the additional functionalities.
Yeah. So in fact, you can set it up when you know, like if I wanted to create my activity so it contained one of the, you know, let's say I want to create one that contains a sequence by default when you drop it, I can do that in my designer code so that when I drop it, it sets the default body to already have, you know, a sequence in it.
Yes, and that's another trick that we have at the designer level. We have something that is called iActivity Template Factory.
Uh-huh.
That is something that you can do that. If you implement that interface, you can return a tree of activities, and that implementation will show in the toolbox.
Right.
So when you drop that iActivity Template Factory instance, it will create in the designer a pre-configured tree.
Yeah, and that way you can sort of suggest, like, hey, my activity probably is going to contain a sequence, but if somebody wanted to, they could delete that and drop a flowchart instead.
Yes.
Yeah.
But even further, that's one way to do it. And the other one is have all that child activities as part of the private implementation of your activity.
Uh-huh.
So let's say that you want to do the pre and post sequence.
Yeah.
So you could compose the sequence with other two activities.
Yeah.
And when it comes to execute the sequence, instead of you writing the code for execution, you can just reuse the one that we have.
Oh, okay.
But compose it into your activity.
So in my designer, it would look like I was the sequence, but I wouldn't surface the actual sequence. You wouldn't see it in the design, but at implementation time, I would, you know, create a sequence and add the activity children that I had collected to that one,
right,
and just schedule it.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's very I never thought of that.
So you can have an activity that has a pre, like a property of type activity that is the pre.
Yeah.
Another property of type activity that is the post.
Yeah.
And then in the body, you can have a sequence.
Yeah. Well, but if I wanted to hide the fact that I was using a sequence, I don't want people to see it. I have a children collection. Yeah. And then, so in my designer, it looks like, hey, you know, he's got a sequence. But of course, yes. Then I have to re-implement the full design experience, you know. But that's okay, you know.
No, but actually, well, you could very well keep your, if you have the collection of activities,
yeah.
You could even keep your design experience as you have it,
yeah.
And change only the implementation.
So we are once again out of time. Leon, this was so awesome, and you've given us so many tips. We have more, even more to come. So what was this? Part four. We just finished part four. We're going to do like part five, part six, part seven. Who knows how many we're going to have. We're going to come back and see you next time on Endpoint TV.